Morning. How's everybody doing? Been a while. Bet you've missed me. I'll bet. Well, I think we're kind of sailing along here. Normal type of off-season work. We, had a little bit of transition on our team with players, also with coaches, and we got everybody back. The off-season program's in full swing. Feel like that's got a lot of guys back here working hard. And we're in kind of the team building stage, as we always are at this point in the year, looking at players in the NFL, looking at college players, and approaching the college draft. That's always an exciting time of year for, I think, all organizations, coaches, scouts, personnel people. Where you start putting it together and trying to familiarize yourself and learn about all the new players that are coming into the draft and just try to be prepared for whatever the draft scenarios are that could take place next weekend. So really no set formula on it. I think the best thing is just do your homework, be prepared, and be ready to deal with whatever the situations are. No matter where you are on the draft board, at least it seems like it's this way for us, but talking to other people in the league, it's if you're at 10, you'd rather be at 5, or 20. If you're at 20, you'd rather be at 10 or 30. If you're at 30, you'd rather be at 20. So it doesn't really matter where you are. We're at 21. We look up there and probably find another place we'd rather be. But if we were there, we'd want to be somewhere else. So, it's just one of the mind games that you play going into the draft. But in the end, it just comes back to being prepared, doing your homework, and trying to understand where the players fit. In your system, when it's your turn to either pick or trade. And so that's pretty much where we are. We've gone through the board pretty thoroughly, and now it's a lot of last minute kind of tie up things, and trying to, make some evaluations of players relative to different positions or, different scenarios. One thing about this draft I think is a little bit different than some of the other ones, not totally unique, but just there are more players that I would say are more in the developmental stage for one reason or another. Either they didn't play a lot last year, or they're fairly young in their career, and just there isn't as much exposure on them as maybe what we've had in the past, in terms of from a broad picture. They're always juniors entering. They're always guys that haven't played a lot of football, that are circumstantially kind of behind. They're not good players. There's just not enough exposure on them. Seems like there's more of them this year. One-year starters, half-year starters, guys coming out early, guys that were hurt, stuff like that. But, that's the way it goes. We're all looking at the same players, so just try to do the best we can with the information that we have available. So that's where we're at. So anything on the draft, that type of thing, be happy to talk about. Again, from a team-building standpoint, what's happened has happened, and, we're just going to try to take advantage of every opportunity we have, put the best team we can on the field this year. That's the same thing we do every year in March, April, May, June, July. That's what we do.
As someone who likes to see production and likes to see real-time activity and reactions from a player, is it difficult to have those guys who, for one reason or another, have missed significant time, maybe like Cromartie from Florida State?
Yeah, exactly. You're just working on a lot less tape. You want to go back and see, how'd the guy do against matching up against this type of player in this situation, and it's just not there. So, but again, everybody's working with the same information, so you just have to evaluate what you can from a workout, from the personal contact, from the film that is available, from what the scouts saw when they watched practice, that type of thing, and just you're going on less information, but that's, like I said, we're all in the same boat on that. So, would you love to see more? Sure. But it's not always there.
Does that really make you hesitant to go with a guy who you might otherwise early up thinking about?
Well, it's, again, relative to other years, where you're looking at, you go back to a couple of years ago and you're at the bottom of the first round, you're looking at, Kevin Jones and Steven Jackson and Vince Wilfork and Watson and guys like that. I don't know that at the end of the first round this year you're going to be looking at that same type of player, that has, though, again, and maybe that year was an aberration, I don't know. But, it is what it is. So I don't know that this year you're going to be looking at guys that you have as much history on. I'm not saying they're not as good of players, but they're just not as much college history on them. And again, so most of it's circumstantial. You know, it's not anybody's fault. It's but it's just that's the way it is.
How's this group of linebackers leading into last year's draft? I think I remember you saying something that you had some talks with your scouts about whether the standards that you have for that position might be too high because you weren't seeing enough players that had the qualities you were looking for. Are you seeing more of them in this year's draft?
I think there are probably, I'd say there are more guys this year at the linebacker position. You know, again, we're a team that with inside and outside linebackers, you know, with it's a little wider spread for us than with some teams. But for us, I'd say there's probably more linebackers than we've had the last couple of years. And some of those guys have had a lot of production, you know, have had a lot of playing time, guys that have, you know, been 3-4 year starters in top programs, that are rushers, that can play the run, that, you know, have some position flexibility. Yeah, I'd say that there's a more depth in that group than what we've seen the last few years. Mm-hmm.
Seems like there's a pretty big group of like corner safety combo guys with Huff and Whitner and Jason Allen. Is there been a development in the college game that you've seen that's kind of got guys playing both sides? And, you know, I mean, obviously, how attractive would that be?
I think that's pretty common. I think that every year there's 4, 5, 6 guys that fall into that category that, you know, that were safeties in college that are being projected to corner, that are corners in college that maybe could play safety or that have been used in both spots. You know, sometimes guys get played out of position in college because they don't have enough depth there, so they take maybe their best player who really should be a safety in the NFL, but at that level he's their best cover guy, so they move him out to corner. I mean, I think you see that every year with a certain number of guys. Certainly there are guys this year in that category that have done both, whether they can do both. And again, depending on what kind of system you play defensively, you know, they may or may not be able to play both spots. I think a lot of it depends on how, you know, how you play those, you know, what your overall system requires, how easily those guys can adapt to it.
And there'd be more value in a guy like that too, because...
Yeah, assuming he could do it, sure. Yeah, exactly. But I think with some of those players, some teams will see it as flexibility. Other teams will see it as he can only do this for us or he can only do that for us, again, depending on what their system is.
Getting back to the linebackers, the earliest you've taken one, I think, was a true, quote-unquote, linebacker coming out of college. It was Claridge last year in the 5th round. What is it about what you're looking for that makes you more of a team that's prone to having linebackers who assimilate into the pro game from defensive end or...
Well, I mean, I don't think there's anything special about, you know, where we've taken them or haven't taken them. It's just worked out that way. It's not with any intent to, you know, to take them or not take them. You know, it's kind of how the draft falls in that particular year or that particular round. I think if you look at most of the 3-4 teams, that a lot of those outside linebackers are going to be college defensive ends, and that's, you know, that's pretty much where they end up if those guys are, you know, the 240, 250, 260 kind of guys in college, that most people aren't standing them up, putting them in coverage. They're putting them down and rushing them. And most college teams play a 4-man line. So, you know, there's only a few college teams that I think really play a system similar to ours. So that's, you know, Virginia, you know, being probably the main one. But that's, you know, that's just the nature of the college game. So,
are you seeing more guys this year, for example, whether it's D'Amico Ryans or Carpenter or Manny Watson, guys who actually played some linebacker or a fair amount of linebacker at the college level, who might be interesting to you and can assimilate quickly into your program?
Well, again, for us, most of the guys who have played linebacker in college to play linebacker are really going to have to play inside. And most guys that play outside, most of them in our system are guys that have played down and played defensive end. And I think if you look at, you know, a team like Dallas, San Diego, you know, with Merriman last year or Ware last year, guys like that, Pittsburgh, you know, teams that are 3-4 teams, that most of the outside linebackers they've drafted have been college ends, primarily rush guys.
College linebacker, generally speaking, if he comes out of, you know, Iowa State as a linebacker, he's probably going to have to be inside the 3-4 system.
Yeah. I would say most likely, yes.
Does that make outside linebacker in the 3-4 the hardest position to scout for you guys?
It's certainly a hard one in terms of projection. Yeah, it is, because a lot of guys you're looking at in college haven't played on their feet, and on first and second down, that's probably where they would be playing for us. But, you know, again, you get into, even though guys play the same position in college, what they're asked to do and what they're playing against a lot of times is quite a bit different than what we see, particularly in the passing game. So, but it is, it's, you know, we're looking at projecting guys who are down to, you know, projecting them up to playing on their feet. And that's, you know, that's definitely a conversion. Now, a lot of those guys have some kind of a background in it. A lot of them do, you know, as they grew, maybe they played on their feet in high school or as a freshman or a sophomore in college, and then they got bigger and, you know, went down. So sometimes there's something to go back on there. Not always, but, you know, occasionally.
With some of the early entrants, I guess, the last couple of years, or maybe it's just skewed because so many high picks, receiver position, is it as thin as some are saying in terms of overall depth?
Well, you know, the last couple of years, we've had a lot of guys go in the first round at receiver, mostly bigger receivers. And there's certainly been a, you know, a trend and a little bit of a, you know, stampede to get those kind of guys. It seems like there's fewer of them this year. Not saying that they're better or worse, but there's, you know, there are the guys this year that are maybe higher on the board that don't have that, you know, 6'2", 215 stature that a lot of them had coming out the last couple of years. So I don't know if it's thinner or not thinner. I think there are good receivers in this draft. I think there are good receivers in other drafts, but it seems like there's not as much of a league frenzy to get to the guys that, you know, that don't have the kind of size that we've seen in the past couple drafts at that position.
So they kind of, if there were 3 or 4 big guys up front, you'd still get these same smaller guys right where they are. So the depth may not be as bad as it seems, just because.
Yeah, I think there are good receivers in this class, and but again, there are fewer guys that are, you know, in that bigger receiver category like we've seen in the past couple of years.
Bill, now that you're changing kickers, does that make it more likely you might draft someone at some point? And what is
the kicker? Well, you know, we drafted a kicker a couple of years ago. You know, we'll draft players in any position that we think can be competitive for a spot on this roster. And that's across the board. Doesn't matter what position they're at.
Is a kicking group similar as both recent years, a little better, a little worse? Is it tough to draft players?
But, you know, I think there are good players at every position in this draft, including all the specialist positions. And, you know, at what point that becomes, you know, attractive, who knows?
Bill, I know free agency is free agency, but since Adam left, I've talked to season ticket holders who are just interested in the insight of the team as to how the process of Adam leaving ended up, you know, happening. I mean, was it a physical, was it financial, or was it just the nature of the game? Can you give us a little insight on that?
Not really. I mean, I think it's, you know, that there's going to be transition on every team. Every team in the league has that. You know, we've had players come, we've had players go, and that's, you know, that's the way it is in terms of individual negotiations and all that. No, I don't. I mean, I think it's a lot longer story than it's worth telling. It doesn't make any difference. You know, it's, he's not here, so, you know, we're going to do what do we do every year, every spring, is, you know, build our team, try to make it as competitive as we can heading into training camp and into the regular season in the fall. So that goes for every position, every player. It's across the board.
Have your free agent losses of this free agent season changed your thought process at all in terms of drafting, where you might have drafted something else after these guys
finished? No, I don't think so. I don't think you can do it that way, Alan. I really don't. I think you can't create players. You got to draft the board based on what, you know, what your options are. And as soon as you start taking players, you know, truly based on need, if they can't fill that need, then you have to come back the next year or the next pick or whatever, and you know, you're drafting again for the same spot. You haven't filled anything other than, you know, putting a name up on the, you know, on a piece of cardboard and putting it up on depth chart. But you know, you really don't have anything if the player can't, you know, fulfill that expectation or that role that you think you've drafted them for. So I think you're a lot better off drafting players that can perform on your team in a role that you need, or in a role that they can, that, you know, that gives some value to the team. And sometimes players aren't there at the position you want them, but you can't manufacture them. You just gotta, you know, take the player that helps your team the most at that point, even if it's at a position that you may not necessarily, you know, is not the top need. I mean, again, I go back to when I was with the Giants and we drafted Lawrence Taylor, and we had Lawrence Taylor and Brad Van Pelt, and we took Carl Banks, and nobody liked that pick. That was a pretty stupid pick. Why would you take Banks when you have Van Pelt and Taylor? And that turned out to probably be one of our best picks at the Giants. So, you know, I think you gotta take guys that you think are good football players, and you know, putting a team together, that's certainly a process you gotta go through. But if you try to manufacture somebody, you know, we need this position, and then take a guy and he's doesn't end up being able to do the job, then you still need that position, you know.
How are the rehabs of Light, Dan Copen, and Rodney impacting any of your plans?
Yeah, again, I don't think they really do. You draft based on what you have to select from at that point in time on the board and what your options are, whether it's to trade or take, you know, whatever the choices of players are that you've identified. And I don't think you're really thinking at that point about, you know, anything other than who's up there and what they can do for your team. You can't worry too much about, you know, other guys on your team, what their situation is, because, you know, you can go out there the first day of training camp and that could change, you know, on one play. So, I don't feel like we can look at it that way, and we don't.
Bill, Rondale White tore his hamstring. If he was a player that you were really interested in at 21, how much of an effect would that injury have in you selecting him?
Well, I think when you look at college players, depending on what the injury is, you know, you can go back to examples of guys like Willis McGahee, who was coming off an ACL that most people thought wasn't going to play his freshman year or his rookie year. So, you know, unless a guy's got an injury that you don't think is going to heal, then, you know, that's one thing. You know, we go through injuries with players all the time, and they miss some time, and then they come back and they play, and they've been able to play effectively. So, you know, as long as the injury is going to heal, I think that, you know, for the most part, the players, you know, it's not like we have a game next week that, you know, a player can play and be ready to go at some point in time, even if it's not right at the beginning of the season. You know, when you go to the draft, you're looking at, you know, a longer time frame than the first game. Again, taking the McGahee example, you know, there's a guy that started playing his second year and, you know, he's played fairly well. So now if it affects your evaluation, you know, that throws it up in the air. You know, if you feel like you needed a workout to evaluate the player and now you don't have one, then that may affect what your grade or what your rating on the player is, because you haven't really seen the guy work out and there's a question as to whether or not he can perform certain skills, then that might affect, you know, what grade you could put on the guy.
So if he wasn't ready for training camp, that would affect whether or not you selected him, a player?
I don't think it necessarily would, no. I mean, again, if you're drafting a guy, especially if you're drafting him high, you know, you'd like to think that it'd be around, you know, a little bit longer than the first day of training camp. You know, and we've had players every year that weren't ready for their first day of training camp. It didn't mean they weren't good players. Didn't mean they didn't contribute a lot to the team that year. So, you know, I don't think that's the final evaluation.
How was the running back class?
I think it's, you know, fairly typical. There are a lot of good players in there. There are guys that have different skill sets. You know, some guys that are probably primarily third down back, some guys that are primarily first and second down back, some guys that probably can play on all three downs, some guys that are returners that can fit into the fourth down equation. And so, you know, depends on kind of what you're looking for and you know, how well you think they can do those certain skills. Again, there's some players that are really good in certain situations, not as good in other situations, other guys that are probably, you know, pretty good in a lot of different situations, but not as good as somebody else on first down or on third down or as a returner. So, you know, a lot of different combination of skills at that position. And, again, depending on what, how well you think those players perform the skill, then that'll affect the grade on them. So, you know, I imagine if you went and polled 32 teams and went to the running back board, you'd probably see a lot of different ordering of those same players. You know, again, depending on how the teams valued, not whether or not they could play, but how much they valued their ability on in certain situations, or, you know, as an every down player versus as a specialist, first down or third down or return or whatever it was, how much value they put on those.
Two main running backs you've had here over the last couple of years, Antoine Smith and Corey Dillon, are big guys. Perception is that they get the tough yards inside between the tackles, especially late in the year. Is that just coincidence, or is that that's your ideal type of running back?
Well, I think every team in the league would like to have, at every position, you know, big, fast, tough, productive players. Not everybody. Well, I mean, we have other players that aren't. I mean, Kevin Falk's been very productive for us. You know, we've had other players. So, like, you know, what the player is, what he is. You know, you can't take a 5'8", 200-pound guy and make him, you know, 6'2", 240. So, but if he's productive at that, in his style play and his physical stature, whatever it is, then, you know, I think he can have value for you. There's plenty of good backs. I mean, you know, it's Hall of Fame backs. Walter Paytons of the world and, you know, guys like that, Barry Sanders and all that, you know, they weren't 6'2", 235, but, you know, they were great players. So, I wouldn't rule out anybody or Reggie Bush, you know. I'm sure he could play for us, but, I wouldn't rule anybody out.
You staff running backs then? You don't say, okay, this guy's a better player than this guy and this guy's a better player than this guy. You say, okay, this guy has third down value, first down value, maybe punt return
value.
Well,
yeah, we kind of have a grading scale that reflects those things. But clearly they're different players. You might have two players with the same grade on them. One guy's a third down punt return guy, and another guy's a first and second guy down guy that is a good runner, but you probably don't want him out there on third down, and he's not a returner. But again, they could have roughly the same. They could have the same grade. But they bring a different skill set to you. So at the point in time that came down between those two players, you know, even though they had the same grade, you know, you'd make a decision based on which type of player you wanted. Just like you could have a tackle who had that same grade too. You know, do you want a tackle or do you want a third down back? You know, based on not just their skill, but all the other things that come with it, you know, their toughness, their leadership, all the intangibles, you know, all that stuff too.
How much do you feel like you have enough flexibility heading into the draft that there's someone that's, you know, falling somewhere you might be
off? Yeah, I think that this year, I think we have quite a bit of flexibility in the draft from a draft strategy standpoint. You know, last year we went into the draft with no third round pick. It was a compensatory pick, but it was not tradable. So I felt like we didn't have too much flexibility this year. You know, we have an extra third and extra fourth from last year's trades, and our two sixth round picks are compensatory. They can't be traded, so they're really not, you know, a factor in terms of draft strategy. But having those extra mid round picks, you know, in a full draft does certainly give you flexibility to, you know, to move up in rounds. Again, there's only so far you can move in that first round. You know, from 21, you're not going to be able to get, you know, into the top 10, let's say. But, you know, you could move up a couple spots. But then from that point on, I think, you know, you would have pretty good flexibility if you wanted to move forward, you know, if you want to package picks together. So, and that's a little bit different from, you know, kind of the situation heading into last year's draft. But again, we all know from our draft history that we're, you know, we're not afraid to trade them, moving up, moving down, or like we did last year, just sit there and take them when our turn comes up. So, you know, there's no way to predict that. It's good to have the flexibility to do it, but there's really no way to predict it. You just have to, you know, evaluate the situations as they come along, and, you know, when the phone rings, answer it and see what the options are, and then decide whether or not that's, you know, something that organizationally we feel like is a positive and productive move.
Takes two final questions. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's always that whole process of kind of, you know, establishing a lines of communication with the various teams and maybe what, you know, teams are looking to do or not do, just to kind of expedite the process. But, you know, it's teams for the most part are reluctant to make draft choice trades prior to the draft. You know, when I was in Cleveland, I made one with Jimmy Johnson, and we traded, we swapped spots in the second round for some picks down the line, and we both wanted to kind of know what we had to work with, you know, rather than getting into the draft and doing that and trying to figure it out, you know, kind of on the fly. We both kind of liked going into the draft knowing that, okay, here, you know, here's, this is a fair trade. This is, you know, we want to move back. You want to move up. Here's the, you know, great. And it's funny, Jimmy and I have talked about that, but most people don't like to do it that way. You know, they kind of want to wait and see what's there and decide whether or not the value is there and, you know, don't want to move down because they're, you know, want to take a look and, you know, see what's there when, if they stay. And so, you know, I think it's anything good or bad. It's just kind of a difference of philosophy. See, you don't see too much of that in the NFL, even though, you know, like the Atlanta Denver trade, right? Yeah. On Abraham, you know, well, that was to, you know, that was to do the deal with the Jets and all that. So again, it was a very, you know, specific trade, but just the general movement of draft choices before the draft, there's, you know, there's a lot less of that than compared to what there is on draft day. You know, sometimes you see it in the top five or top 10 if you're moving for a specific player, but that's really a player trade. I mean, you can say it's trading draft picks, but you're really moving to get to a certain spot to get a certain player, and that's really a, you know, it's a true player trade. Just haven't filled in the name yet.
Can you speak to how important in your system depth on the defensive line is, and just stockpiling guys there, you know, with the hope that a bunch of them will work out and you can really set a rotation where you have depth in the position?
Well, depth's important at every position on the football team. You never know where you're going to need it, and as I've said many times before, depth in May is a lot different from depth in November. So, and that's the only time it really matters. So, you know, you try to get as many good football players as you can on your team. Part of that is to give yourself depth during the season. Part of it is to create competition, you know, in training camp and heading into the season. And I think that competition's, it's good for everybody. And it also helps you develop, you know, some flexibility on your roster in terms of teaching guys multiple positions and being able to, you know, build your own depth, you know, where one guy can do multiple jobs rather than having two or three different guys to do that, because that's a very realistic situation that'll occur during the regular season. So, but it's great to have depth on the defensive line, but really you want that at every position. I don't think any team ever has the kind of depth they want. You're always looking for an upgrade in it. And that's one of the things that the draft gives you is, you know, usually there's some quality players at the top of the draft that you can, you know, see maybe helping your team hopefully sooner. But then there are also, you know, selections later on that can give you that kind of depth that you're talking about where guys can grow into the position. And, you know, in time, in a year or however long it takes for them to kind of get the system down, that they can create depth at those other spots. So that's, you know, it's a good opportunity to strengthen your team if you can. You know, hit on the right guys. I think every draft has good players in it, and again, a lot of it's system oriented. I mean, I'm sure we have a lot of guys on our board that other teams don't really think that much of, and I'm sure other teams have guys on their board that don't really fit that well for us. So, you know, I think there are enough players to help our football team, and I would imagine the other teams think that too. You know, some positions maybe have a few more than others, but you know, again, to me, the thing about this draft is there are more guys that have less production, less history at this point, particularly early, you know, some of the higher rated players. They just haven't had the opportunity for one reason or another to perform as much or as long as I think historically what you would see in most other drafts relative to those, you know, to those grade levels. But you know, like I said, we're all working off the same board, so, you know, I'll get the same challenge. Okay. All right. See you next weekend.